So, Mr. Secretary, any apologies?
Yes, I have two apologies. One is from Honorable Mafolo, who wanted us today due to his impediment. And another one is from Honorable Sakuba. She will join us later, about 20 minutes. There are two apologies from the Minister and the Deputy Minister. They are attending a cabinet order from today until Thursday. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Thank you, Your Majesty, for your on the agenda, we have briefing by the Department of Social Development on the implementation of the Children's Act. We have briefing by the Department to respond to the proposed amendments to the Children's Act, and then a briefing by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to respond to the proposed amendments to the Children's Act as we agreed for our last committee. I want to pose a slight change to the agenda to say that we take the presentation of social development, and after that we go into the one of trust and constitutional development and we combine the questions. Members, I have a problem with that much? Just to remind members that it has a discussion with the committee secretary that in terms of the process, we take the presentation of today and the questions, and then we'll finalize the committee's report next week. And from there on, we'll decide on then we'll go for the motion of desirability or not, and then we'll take the report on the implementation of the Children's Act amendment to the Act to Parliament. So that is the process. We won't discuss liability or not and all those issues today. We'll focus on the amendment and on the two departments' presentations on the responses to the amendment. Okay. Can I will with that, I'll give over to the DG of Social Development to introduce the presentation to the portfolio committee on social development on the matter of course.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable members, colleagues. My name is Dr. Bhagat, the Director General of Social Development. To me, Chairperson, I have a team for team managers from social development, both from the children's units and welfare services, as well as the legal section, to assist in discussions and also in the presentation of the proposed amendments to the Children's Act. Chairperson, I want to just give an overview that these amendments, the key focus areas for today's presentation will touch on the amendments affecting adoption services. We've also been looking at the amendments relating to Section 120 of the Act. We'll also be looking at Section 150, followed by Sections 151 and 152, and then also Section 159. The colleagues will take the members through the detail. I just wanted to highlight that, Chair, since the Children's Act came into operation, the first 43 chapters, or clauses rather, in July 2007, and the remaining one, the first April 2010, there has been a number of challenges that we encountered. There's a lot of successes that we can be proud of, but there were also challenges in some cases. The matter was settled by court. Some of the decisions were in favor of government, especially when it comes to things like foster care placement. If I may refer members to Section 150, that was dealing with the issue of the provision of support for children who are in foster care placement, and there were a whole issue about the interpretation of that section relating to whether parents that show that they do have some visible means of supporting the child in fact to qualify to get the necessary support from government. So what I wanted, Chairperson, through you to suggest in the presentation, as it has been circulated to members, the sections, we follow them through in that chronological sequence. We start with the adoption services, then we go straight to section 120, section 150, 151. But the presenters will guide the members as they go through the presentation. Ms. Margot Davis will start, Chair, with your permission, to deal with the background as well as the key challenges in the implementation of the Act. And then the head of legal services, Mr. Kusele Tolusilo, will go into the specific clauses in terms of the proposed amendments, which in our view will deal with the very fundamental challenges that were experienced during the implementation of the Children's Act. These are most urgent and most immediate amendments that will assist us in dealing with these crucial and important matters. Thank you very much, Chairperson. May I hand over to Ms. Davis?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to present on the implementation challenges of the Children's Act, as well as the proposed amendments. We made one change to the slide on slide 16 on section 120. We've made provided a new proposed solution, so I just want you to be aware of that. We've tried to go to numbers, it seems to have been a problem. It just doesn't want to take the number, and my apologies on that one. I've really tried it. The background, what I will be doing on the overview is the background, the implementation challenges and risks, the operational implementation challenges, the legislative implementation challenges, and then I will hand over at that point to the chair, the Chief Director, Legal Services, for the implementation challenges that will be addressed by the Second Amendment Bill. As the DG has said, initially there were 43 sections of the Children's Act that were promulgated on the 1st of July 2007, with the remaining sections on the 1st of April 2010. Since promulgation, the Department has been monitoring implementation, which revealed that there are areas where implementation is good and areas that they are challenging, and that necessitated the amendment of certain provisions of the Act. The Department commenced with the process of reviewing the Act in April 2011 to consult relevant stakeholders and identify implementation challenges and possible solutions. We've conducted extensive consultations in 2011 and 2012 to engage with stakeholders on proposed amendments to the Act. Substantive submissions and proposed amendments were received from individuals, organizations, coalitions, and several workshops that we have conducted. However, before the implementation of the Act, the Department undertook a costing exercise to estimate the cost and personnel implications presented by the new Act. As you are aware that some of the the personnel implications required, initially 16,000 at a low scenario, and it was about 67,000 social workers at a high scenario. The costing also focused on constitutional risk studies, litigation risk studies, as well as regressive provisions of the Act. For relevant stakeholders developed implementation plans, and these were also costed. The major risk for the implementation of the Act was found to be funding and human resources. The Department approached National Treasury for additional funding to mitigate the anticipated implementation risks. In some areas, the new obligations were not funded and the available funds and personnel were stretched to cover them. Some of the operational implementation risks, challenges, were the lack of staff to implement the Children's Act, including social workers, child and youth care workers, social auxiliary workers, and social work supervisors. To mitigate this challenge, the department has been awarding social work scholarships to increase the number of social workers available in the pool. Furthermore, training of child and youth care workers have commenced, and it is envisaged that 10,000 child and youth care workers would have been trained in 5 years' time, and this is through the ECB process. The Children's Act also imposed new obligations on the department and other relevant stakeholders. However, the budgets have not increased significantly, and this affected the quality and prospects for extension of some of the services. Operational implementation challenges. With the new obligations introduced by the Act, the department had to realign its structures and create new posts in order to provide new services. One challenging area that required extensive realignment and restructuring was the management of the Child Protection Register. Part B of the Child Protection Register is a new function, and it proved very challenging in the initial stages of implementation, but the situation is slowly stabilizing, and at this point, it's under control. Legislative implementation challenges. The provision and quality of early childhood development services, another area of concern. The department is investigating this area and will finalize the policy that will provide policy options for the provision and funding of ECD services. As people are aware, the Act says at the moment that the provincial MEC may provide funding for ECD services. The Act also requires that the Minister and provincial MEC develop national and provincial strategies on partial care, ECD, child and youth care centres, drop-in centres and prevention and early intervention services. These strategies must be informed by information contained in provincial profiles that have been finalised by provinces. However, this process is slow and it affects some of the finalisation of some of the strategies. The national strategies for partial care, prevention and early intervention and drop-in centres, however, have been finalised. And the Act also provides for automatic registration of facilities and organisations that were previously registered in terms of the Child Care Act. These have included ECD centres, child and youth care centres and child protection organisations. Notwithstanding this, the new provisions for registration and approval of ECD programmes and programmes offered at child and youth care centres. We've also been experiencing some challenges in this process, and the registration is slow. As it is new, and we've got to accompany this by training and guidance on procedures and processes. Foster care and the care of children by relatives is another challenging area. It is a social work intensive process that entails investigation, child court proceedings, supervision, counselling, administration, monitoring and support. Due to the high foster care cases, the department has often experience a backlog in foster care services. The issue of foster care will be investigated through a comprehensive investigation into certain services for orphan children. Foster care is one option for such children. It is the most popular option available to families because it's funded through the foster child grant. Other favorable options are adoption, guardianship, or awarding of parental responsibilities and rights. Section 1, at this point I am going to hand over to the Chief Director of Legal Services to continue with the presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chairman, Robert members. My presentation will deal with the specific proposed amendments to the Act. And I'm going to start first with the definitions. In the definition part, we are proposing that we amend the definition of adoption social worker. Because the current definition only confines itself to those who are in private practice and those who belong to some organization and excludes social workers who are waiting for government, either at provincial, local, or national. And as a result, there are actually cost implications, issues. For those who want to use the services of an adoption social worker, they would have to require someone to assist them at a fee. And this is why we are proposing that we then amend the definition of adoption social worker to to include social workers who are working for government at all spheres of government. And then alleviate the challenges relating to our functions, which would not necessarily be tied to who we can afford to pay the fees. On the left amendment that we're dealing with is on section 120, subsection 4, which is this will relate to what my colleague has indicated, that there was some amendment to the purpose of the presentation. If members of the maybe just want to look at the presentation.
If you change it, you're affecting the presentation.
Yeah, it is in for the presentation, but it doesn't appear somewhere else.
Yeah, but you tell us the way to go. I like to look at the screen and the presentation if I can do it.
It's extra fee includes them all. And the general market.
Yeah,
I'm going to
approach 15.
Okay. Thank you, sir. The current section, Article 20, subsection 4, the Children's Act, deals with people who are considered unsuitable to work with children. And those are people who may have been convicted of murder, attempted murder, rape, indecent assault, or assault. And this is all in relation to children. And then subsequently, also, there is also a section 120, subsection 4b, which also deals with the if a court makes a finding and gives a direction in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, but the person may, by reason of mental illness or mental defect, is not capable of understanding the procedures or has to make a proper defense, or by reason of mental illness or mental defect, not criminally responsible for the act which constitutes murder, attempted rape, indecent assault, assault with intent to defend body in harm, or the right to a child. Now, this one relies to the challenge related to the following. The fact that, firstly, that the section requires that a person must have been found to be unsuitable for work with children. The suggestion being that once a person is convicted, the court must also make a finding, which is a separate process in relation to having convicted the person. And as a result, this because the court does not always make that finding that the person is unsuitable to work with children. We end up with a situation where we are unable to enter this information to the party of the National Child Protection Register. And we have to, once again, try and contact the custom to seek clarity in relation to whether or not there's a finding made in relation to this person's unsuitable to work with children. And this has proven to be a very time-consuming exercise and not really successful. Now, we now have proposed that in order to deal with this challenge, we must replace the word found in section 120, section 4, with the word deemed to be, which means once you are convicted, automatically you are deemed to be unsuitable to work with children, and there will be no need for court to make a finding to the fact that you are unsuitable to work with children. Now, again, section 120 also deals with, like it has indicated, the rape, attempted murder, but it does not deal with the rest of the sexual offences. What we've proposed to do is that we need to insert in the definition part of the Act a definition of sexual offences as provided for in the Sexual Offences Act. Now that part deals extensively, that definition in sexual offences deals extensively with sexual offences. It includes all sorts of sexual offences which are not necessarily referred to in the Children's Act. And we propose that where there's reference made to rape, for example, in section 120, and also indecent assault, you must replace them. You must replace rape and indecent assault with sexual offences, which will then cover all aspects relating to sexual offences, and not necessarily only rape and indecent assault. And it will also include, amongst others, the attempted rape. Well, I think I've had to already start where we will be effecting amendments to that. what will happen is that once this amendment is made, there will be an alignment between the Children's Act and the Sexual Offences Act. When you make reference to sexual offences, you will be referring to those even included in the Sexual Offences Act. The next part of the proposed amendment is Section 100. I'm sure honourable members may recall that there was a number of cases relating to this provision, where there was an interpretation that to the effect that the court judgment meant that the grandparent may not be able to be provided with a further care grant in relation to the grandchildren, because the grandparents owe the grandchildren a common law duty of support. But ultimately, the matter went to court, where the court made it clear that if grandparents do not qualify for the care grant in relation to the grandchildren. What causes the confusion was the fact that the court, especially the magistrate court, interpreted the meaning of this means of support differently to mean what I just indicated, that there was a view that if this child is related to you, you cannot apply for the care grant in relation to the child. And second, that the means to be taken into account when determining whether the flows to the means of support were those of the prospective foster parent as opposed to those of the child. And when the court clarified this to say visible means of support will refer to the means of the child and not of a prospective foster care parent. Now the proposed amendment also of visible means of support would basically mean that the child does not have the ability to support him or herself, and such inability is readily evident, obvious, or apparent, which means you don't have to go into details to try and find out what means does this child have. If you look on face of it and you find that the child does not have the means of support, you should then make a finding that the child indeed requires foster care placement and a foster care order. There was also a challenge relating to Section 151 and 152 of the Children's Act. This related to where children may have been removed with or without the court order. That generally, currently the Act provides that you must keep, once a child is removed with or without the court order, the social worker must go and make for the court and only come back to court after the period of 90 days. And we were challenged on this in the sense that the amount of time that was allowed to pass was considered inordinate in relation to the affected, either parent or guardian of the child, in as far as the final adjudication of whether or not the child was removed correctly was concerned. The court was of the view that there must be a shorter period of time within which the child must be brought before court for the court to make a decision as to whether or not the child was removed correctly. The period roughly here is that the matter must come to court within a period of between 24 hours and 48 hours, wherein the court must then make a decision on whether or not the child was removed correctly. And we've effected these amendments to these two sections to allow for that automatic review of the removal of the child, initial review of the removal of the child. The next section deals with the extension of the alternative care order. The current Act provides that these court orders must be extended by court. However, it has proven to be a challenge in the sense that sometimes the courts are not able to deal with these matters in time. And as a result, some of them will lapse before the matters are brought before court. And then we have proposed that we must repeat. Okay, so what happened was that we were then challenged in court in relation to this. And there was a court order, and it was by agreement by both parties that you must revert to the old provision of the Child Care Act, which provided for the extension, administrative extension of the alternative care orders by the head of the Department of Social Development. We've made provision for such an extension by the Department of Provincial Head of Social Development and also by the head of the DG. However, I must state that the office of the state government does not necessarily agree with this proposal, because they are of the view that this is actually a judicial function, the extension of court orders, but it's a matter that will still be taken out of it. Now, the next section deals with the transfer of people over above the age of 18 and below the age of 21. But currently, there's no provision made for the transfer of such persons because it only deals with children. However, there are instances in terms of the children as well. You can allow someone who's above the age of 18 but below 21 to stay in alternative care on certain conditions, but there was no provision for them to transfer from one alternative care center to another, and you proposed those amendments. On the proposed forward chair, the department intends to introduce amendment of the bill to give effect to this proposed amendment. And we do consider them to be urgent, and they do not include financial. Then my colleagues can give us further from here. Okay. We are also saying that the amendments will give effect to the challenges related to the implementation of the, rather address the challenges related to the implementation of the Children's Act. And we will, as a result, then focus on the matters related to the policy and the costing for other things. Thank you, Chair. Okay. What I also need to indicate in relation to the process, Chair, is the fact that this bill has already been presented before the social cluster in July. It's a CAB memo already on the cabinet, which will say before cabinet the 27th of this month. And from then the matter will be introduced in as was already indicated in Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think that comment essentially stole my thunder. But Chair, I think the colleagues have summarized succinctly the issues. One of the letters that I think I should just indicate is that there were quite a few unrelated matters raised by other stakeholders during the internal consultation processes at social cluster level. But that would necessitate a broader look on possible third amendment of the Children's Act. What I have been calling about as well by the legal team is that it's usually undesirable to have so many amendments that approach in a piecemeal fashion because of the risk of contradictions that could be unforeseen in terms of violation of various clauses of the legislation. But I think with the current amendment as package, we have the firm view that we have addressed the most immediate needs that will allow smooth running and enhance services to children, especially in instances where there is vulnerability and the need for alternative care placement. Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, teachers from the Department of Social Development. I'll now give over to your colleagues in the Department of Justice and Institutional Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Ms. Fatima Osman, also of the Department of Justice. Madam Chair, I'd just like to start off by and I usually do this, and I don't know why it happens, but every time I hear the phone call first, and the guy, I have to apologize first, and then get into it with me. And our intention was to provide our comments that we have prepared in respect of the private members' bill to the Department of Social Development, but time, for some other reason, caught up with that. So it was not our intention to come here directly because we felt that it is an act administered by the Department of Social Development and the response should be from that department. Unfortunately, events are just over, Madam Chair. With your permission, Madam Chair, I've submitted a three-page document to the committee. Indeed, Madam Chair. Indeed. the heading for our documents, we'll see its comments prepared by the Chief Director of Legislative Development of the Department. I personally was one of a team of four persons who assisted the portfolio committee on justice and constitutional development in promoting the Sexual Offences Act through Parliament. Madam Chair, and I would appreciate it if we could consider this submission from a purely technical angle, to the extent that, technically speaking, there's not much criticism that one can bring up with regard to the proposed amendment in the private members' hall. However, the question is arise whether it does present a comprehensive list, and in that regard, we argue that three important aspects must be taken into consideration. The absence of statutory provisions, the retrospective effect of the provisions, and then reference to attempt to commit an offence. With regard to the absence of statutory offences, Madam Chair, it should be noted that the problems that preceded the Sexual Offences Act, the Sexual Offences Act on the 16th of December in 2007 replaced all common law sexual offences, and those offences which relate to children which were contained in the Sexual Offences Act. Now that's a very important aspect to take into consideration, Madam Chair, in our view, because precisely of the fact that the offences that were included in Section 124 and 5 of the Children's Act were included before the enactment of the Sexual Offences Act. So therefore it could be argued that reference is made in Section 124 and 5 only to common law, to the common law offences of rape and indecent assault only. I could possibly just, in addition to that, mention that some of the terms, some of the offences, the terms were changed. For example, indecent assault is now what is called sexual assault, as referred to in Section 5 of the Sexual Offences Act. The Sexual Offences Act, once again, introduced many sexual offences that are committed in respect of children. We have footnoted them for you at the bottom of page 2 of our document. And I would just like to immediately highlight that the footnote starts with Section 4, the reference to Section 4, but we should actually have also included reference to Section 3, which is the right provision in the Sexual Offences Act. If I may just deviate for a moment, the Sexual Offences Act, as far as children are concerned, is actually divided into two parts. There are general offences that can be committed against everyone, then including children. Those are the offences in the first part of the Act. But then there's a specific part dealing with specific offences that can be committed against children, for example, the sexual grooming of children, etc. I have listed them there for you, Madam Chair, just as a matter of ease of reference. The legislation is there. The second aspect which I would just like to briefly highlight is the retrospective effect of the provisions. The practical effect of Section 125 of the Children's Act is that it is applicable in respect of conditions that took place after 31 March 2005. This means that in view of the 16 December 2007 implementation date of the Sexual Offences Act, that the particulars of persons who have been convicted of common law and statutory sexual offences against children should then also be included in the register. The reference to common law offences of right and indecent assault, etc., should then therefore be retained in view of the retrospective effect of Section 125, sub 5. But in this regard, we just would like to raise the question whether the current list should not be extended or expanded in order to represent a comprehensive list of those sexual offences that could be committed against children during that period, grouping them against children. The reference to the attempt itself, aim is to add a tentative right to the list of offences that are stipulated in section 120, sub 4 and 5 of the Children's Act. The reference to a tentative right, in our view, Madam Chair, without any reference to the 2007 Act, could be interpreted as a reference to a conviction of a tentative right in terms of the common law. Now, section 55 of the Sexual Offences Act deals with, among others, attempts to commit a sexual offence, and then we argue that it may therefore be more appropriate to amend section 120 sub 4 and 5 of the Principal Act by including then reference to section 55 of the 2007 Act. Paragraph 0.5 on page 3, we have made a proposal, submitted a proposal which we think would be would address the concerns that we have expressed, and then cover all the sex offences that could have and can be committed against children. I don't know whether I need to go through the proposed amendment line by line, but I think it speaks for itself. However, our confusion with specific reference to the private members will be simply raising the question and asking ourselves whether, and of course noting the amendments which are now going to be promoted by the Department of Social Development, just a question of whether it couldn't be more appropriate to develop this bill just in abeyance pending this holistic approach that will assist in amending section 120 sub 4 and 5. That in short, Madam Chair, is our submission with regard to the private minister. I don't know whether the committee has received any other comments on the private member. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Dupia, for your presentation. I want to remember to be asked for two presentations before. can we ask questions from the honourable members from the board? I just want to look on the board.
Chairperson, and thank you for the presentations from both departments. On the after chair, I just want to say that it's taken a private members bill for both departments to actually start speaking to each other. That's what it's taken. Because the Children's Act, as the as presented from the state and says from Social Development, was passed in 2007, and so was the Sexual Offences Act, where the act, the crimes against children didn't mirror each other from day one, quite frankly. And it's taken 6 years and a private member's bill before both departments have sat down and discussed it. Well, not even discussed, but present their suggestions. So if that's what the private member's bill achieves, then it's done its job. But if I can just ask questions specifically to the Department of Justice with regards to the proposed amendment, so section 2.5 of your, on page 3, Roman numeral 2, where you talk about rape or incest, indeed assault or any other offensive person in the Sexual Offences Act. Please bear with us. Our certainly wasn't part of the Sexual Offences Act. Could you just give us some indication of what those other offences are so we clear in our mind that all bases are covered? Thank you. And then also to the Department of Justice, where the Department of Social Development says they want to change the wording. Somebody must be found unsuitable, they were convicted of a certain crime, whatever it was, to be deemed unsuitable. Would that close the loophole? I'm looking at you, DG, because you know what I'm talking about. We had that good meeting last year sometime with the previous DG of Social Development and yourself, where there was quite clear understanding of what the Act actually was intended. So would deemed unsuitable ensure that someone that's been convicted of murder of a child, for example, will automatically appear on the register, or will the judge or the magistrate still have to find them unsuitable? So I want that clarity. Then just on in the statement also said that as far as the public protection measures is concerned, it's stabilizing and it's under control, which I'm very glad to hear. But could you give us some indication of how many names currently are there on this? Thank you. And as far as the adoption is concerned, I'd like to know if the Department of Justice agrees that social workers, the department, sorry, would be able to extend court orders as proposed by the Department of Social Development. Is Justice comfortable with that? And also with, I've lost this, the pages are numbered, so I do apologise. The issue of the documents where only private social workers could are currently allowed to adopt or to ensure adoption of children. So we're going to now, the proposed amendment would then allow state social workers to do that. Okay, so, I mean, I just wanted to get clarity in my mind. You said there won't be any cost implications, but when those social workers have to be trained on how to do it. I mean, there's been what, issues since the merging. There's a whole bunch of social workers have never done it before. So there's no cost implication. And given the severe shortage of social workers currently within the department, what impact will this have on the workload? Have you done any assessments of that? And the last one is just to do with, there's been a lot of media interest in the anti-stacking rules, right? And it was talked about in the media, and the minister said it was going to come before the committee as an amendment. The department has some indication of what they have to do with that particular amendment to the act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Gallagher. Welcome to all to the Honourable Members in favour.
Number one, such a dependent recommendation. And one will be the adoption. Izela bangathi ukuthi upresenta umntwana o-adopte ifamily ayivumelekanga ukuthi nga-aplayela i-child foster care. Umbuzo wami uthi-ke if labantwana bawu-9 bahlala no-grandchild, no-grandmother oyi-1 akasebenzi uhola impesheni, kwenzakalani ngalabo bantwana kuloyo mama if I'm allowed to apply the foster care. Omunye umbuzo wami olandelayo wesibili uthi uma umntwana kade adoptiwe phakathi kwefamily adoptiwe umama obengathola abantwana bese uyashona lo mama, bese ifamily baseshonele umntwana lo mama isale nalo mntwana bese uyamthandi le family lomntwana ahlupheke lo mntwana kwenzakalani kumasocial worker kumele ndile nithaphinde amthathe back kiwo or amyeka nje abonele ukuthi usholabi if sesemncane and maybe use-under age. I'm talking to a chairperson because I experiencing this in my constituency, my constituency. It is a child, a small one, was adopted by a granny, the granny passed away. When she passed away, this child is solid now. She's going everywhere, but the community try to approach the social care, to come and look at this issue of this child. The social worker came and she said she's not now allowed to take that child's head. But that child still under age, is like 10 years or 20 years. So what happened that when the social parents have that incident check? Thank you.
Thank you, I'm sure the department will respond to that. Honourable Moore, you may
thank you, because we don't have number clients, I don't know, but I'm going to talk to the issue of social workers, especially the adoption social workers. I just want to inquire, it will be interesting to learn why from the first place, you know, what the adoption social worker defined as a social worker in a private practice. it will be also very interesting to say if you work privately, do you gain certain skills that make you, you know, sort of specialized? But I would expect that in the social worker study program, they would be taught to do everything, you know. So I'm actually in support of this to say they should be also trained, basically, if there is no training happening in terms of adoption processes before they can actually do the adoption in the public sector. And then the other issue talks to the issue of the ECD funding, the funding of ECD services. The department says they're going to investigate and finalize the policy. Can you give us an indication by when? Because this is a big one, you know, especially for those ECD centers that offer services to the government. And you know they are struggling financially, and we know that a lot of international donors have actually put out, and a lot of them are suffering. And the other issue was the child protection order. Like the question order, she said, how many names are there currently? And the last one, chairperson. Yeah, the implementation plan is actually very interesting. I would like to know, you know, I think it's slide 4 on mine. It's slide 4 on mine. The way you talk about implementation, you say all relevant stakeholders develop implementation plans that were covered. Is it possible for us to get this implementation plan? And if you can just share with us, who are these relevant? Are you talking about departments, and it would be interesting to know which department. And actually to say, what is the cost? You know, what was the outcome? Thank you.
Thank you for the
let us just go through the presentation. Okay, we will hear that social development is working on a number of, we just asked if you don't assist us as a cultural committee in working on the number of acts moving forward. Chair, I've only got one question on the slide that talks to transfer of a child in an alternative care setting in accident. As a center that you've been talking to, the child below 21, but above 18. That's why to check if there is any that caters if you want to take that child below 21, but above 18, which does not have a necessary or specific act that tells you which proceedings that you have to follow. Hence, there is nothing that caters for if the child is below 21, but above 18.
Thank you, Chair. I want to talk on the issue of foster care, the high cases, the backlog that is explained by the Department of Social Development. I want to ask the Justice Department, because most of the backlog are from the court, especially when we talk about the application that will expire on the hands of the department because of the backlog of the courts. What is the department doing? Because in terms of rural people, we are suffering transport for application. You go to another, all the terminals are not on the same place. You go to another for application, you travel to another one for court, and you come back, you doesn't have don't get the answer for the whole year, and you start afresh. Particularly in Mauritania, in materials that you apply in Mauritania, they go to Mafike, they will see Mafike for the whole year, come back and start afresh. Those people are suffering. What is the Department of Justice doing on the matter of the court? Because you can't blame the social department. They've done their work, they went as Department of Justice. Can you assist us on that matter?
Thank you very much, Honourable Bula.
Thank you, Chair. You know, Chairperson, to the Department of Social Development and Department of Justice, you know, it gives us a sense of pride that we are now going to see light at the end of the tunnel. In the very same context, when we were arguing the issue of the child support grant and progressive implementation, etc., eventually happened. But importantly is that the amendment that is proposed by the department is now receiving the tweaking, the alignment, the synchronization of the legal emphasis. And I'm glad that, you know, I don't want to pose questions that might put the cart before the horse. But the fact that if the social Department of Social Development points out amendments that has an impact on implementing because of other pieces of legislation, as pointed out by the Department of Justice, how are you, in view of your amendments, going to ensure that the self-realization of that implementation is in line with the comments of the Department of Justice? Secondly, the department indicated that there is some sort of technical speaking challenges. The Department of Social Development will then obviously have to sort out those kind of challenges. Is the Department of Social Development on the same page with the Department of Justice in order to rectify this? Chairperson, most of the other questions have been asked, but I was tempted to ask this one, thinking we have the legal mind here, that the Department of Justice indicated that constitution, that the Child Act precedes the Social Offences Act. In having said that, are we saying that the amendment that is proposed for the social development might not be in line in terms of the legal interpretation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Gula. Honourable Mata Gula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation that we get from two departments. Chairperson, just it's not a question, but it's just when I look this matter, I think Chairperson, we don't have to be, we have to be more careful as we deal with this amendment. Because if we can move very speed without noticing what is happening in this amendment, then we will end up ourselves moving something that is not moving with something that we didn't see it very carefully. If you said the sexual offences and related matters. Related matters, what is the related matters in especially offences? Also, Chairperson, I think also this thing must also go to the public participation, and it needs us just to take breath and think more about this before we make this thing to pass. I
thank you,
Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I also feel that we should have some time as a committee to go over the two presentations together before we could have a say. But I just welcome most of the proposed amendments, especially the one in relation to the foster care and the care of children by relatives, which affected the grandmothers, which was a really issue, especially to the community. So I really welcome this, but I do agree with Honorable Magabu that we do need to take responsibility and really see the proposals from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. This was the presentation by TSC. Thank you very much.
Do you want to say anything? Just one comment from in terms of questions. I think it's page 17 that my number is finding persons unsuitable to work with children. I think it's not a very chapter of comments and families are also. It is finding persons unsuitable to work with children, section 120 chapter. Is my interpretation correct to say that with this amendment, a person would be deemed unsuitable to be found unsuitable to work with children in criminal proceedings, for then eliminate the legal process of court having to find a person unsuitable to work with children after criminal conviction. So, which will limit the issues of the child protection legislation. Is my interpretation correct? So, of course, we will then another procedure to look of court will follow us. So, if a person is found unsuitable in a criminal proceeding to work with children, it then means his or her name will be limited to find his way to the child protection legislation. I've listened to Mr. De Clear's the presentation that he made. I must say I'm a bit intimidated by technicalities. Also intrigued at the same time. Because obviously it's a separate committee that dealt with the Sexual Offences Act and related matters act. But it's quite interesting to see how the acts actually interlink and is a natural process to take legislation to review. So it's commendable that as a department but also as a cluster that you're looking at the matter. The right of children is very important. We read in the newspapers every day of children being killed or murdered. Women and children get raped and then get murdered. I think in Sierra we had a 4-month-old baby that was raped and 7-year-old together by one person. So the reality is that this country is with us every day. So wherever you are, you're always reminded about this. So the faster you work on these issues, not just the rape issues, but also the other issues, to me, I think the comprehensive approach is a good approach. But the fact that DG, the rights of children should be protected. So we expect departments like social development and justice and constitutional development to be the guardians of children's rights. To me, you are the most important stakeholders, inside the NGO sector, and not public in general, but because of your legislative responsibility that you have to ensure that the rights of our children are protected. So, with that long political speech, could you respond to the question?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I just wanted to thank the committee for the I would say, largely the positive feedback from the proposals that both departments have put forward, and also to just to underscore the fact that we will strive again and again to improve our working relationships. We do have very strong teams and forums that sit between the two departments, right to technical level where we have interactions with the magistrates, chief magistrates, but I also have regular interaction on a one-on-one DG to DG. But we will definitely, because implementation of these pieces of legislation are interdependent and intertwined, so we will definitely strive to do that. Ms. Nomalo, Chair, will just respond to the questions and then hand over to the technical team some of the questions. If they miss anything, I will just come back and bridge the gap. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and colleagues. I will start with the one that deals with implementation plans for that were costed for implementation of the Children's Act. Stakeholders, we're referring to departments that are key and all the provinces, so we can make them available to the community in terms of the request that has just been made. Now, in terms of the adoption, whether there will be no cost implications for social workers doing this work, yes, there will be hidden costs and direct costs, because currently they are not doing it. What we have experienced is that some social workers are beginning to go to court, but magistrates are saying you are not part of the definition of the people who are defined in the legislation to do adoption. So even if there is a cost, it's not going to be measured. However, we can come back later to the committee to indicate how are we going to implement the amendments themselves in terms of cost, because we need to indicate the cost and what funds are we going to use or resources in terms of availability of personnel and other resources that are required for any amendments to be implemented. The other area is issues of training. Of course, they need to be trained because this is a specialized field. And also in the department, we're looking at the specialization as a field within social work for all social workers who are dealing with adoption cases. Then the other area was the backlog of foster care. Maybe if I deal with backlog, there was an issue that if you are, I think it's when the chief director was talking about the court judgment, to say when you are having children as a granny who are under your care, what is the position if you're not allowed to apply? But I think it was clarified to say, it was clarified by the other judgment to say you look at the need of the child, so the children can still access support in that case. And then the issue of if you have adopted a child and as an adoptive parent you pass on and the other people are not really taking care, the duty of the social worker is to make sure that they reassess and put you in alternative care, so that because what you look at is the interest of the child, that the child is safe and taken care of. The other areas were mostly comments. Then I will ask my colleagues to really deal with technicalities, why initially the clauses were not there to include paid social workers and other clauses that need to be responded to.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think when I made the comments about stabilizing and under control, what I meant there, Honourable Members, is that what had happened previously is that we were under-resourced in terms of the capacity to handle the cases that came through when the new Act was promulgated and the new section was promulgated. We have put in structures in terms of human resource capacity to deal with the applications and to ensure that people are getting the responses that they require. And we've also put in, it really was a whole new section that had to come into play, and we've done that. The second thing is, regarding the numbers that you were asking for, I will make sure that you get that tomorrow with all the up-to-date details, and I'll send that through. But that's really what the stabilization. Sorry, my apologies, Honourable Chair. Through you, Chair, that's the response to the question that was asked. Secondly, the issue of adoption social workers in private practice. That used through you, Chair, that used to be a process of in the old Act, in the Child Care Act, that adoption
was such a specialized field that it was only handled by private practitioners, and they have to apply to council for that ability, the South African Council for Social Work Professionals, to be able to get sort of accreditation or licensing to provide adoption services. Subsequently, with the new Act, during that period, social workers that were in the state could only do related adoption. For instance, if you were the stepmother or the stepfather and you wanted to adopt the child who came in because of marriage, you could do that. But that was the type of adoptions that was done primarily by state. But if it was a closed adoption, it was unrelated children to unrelated prospective adoptive parents, it was purely the domain of the private practitioner. What has happened subsequently, and we are having a meeting with council in the next week, is to look at that provision that is in the Social Service Professional Act, because it's in the Act and the Children's Act, and we're looking at the alignment that we need to speak about, because at the moment, in some instances and in some courts, there is a sense that the social workers in the states are allowed to do adoptions, and in some instances it's not. So that is why it's about the magistrate's prerogative thing. So what we're trying to do is just to clean it out and make sure that people that cannot afford to go with the private adoptive social worker can then at least obtain the state assistance through the social worker employed in the state. Madam Chair, on the ECD funding policy. The policy on ECD funding, as it stands, it's the one that we are proposing. It's to change the manner in which ECD is viewed. At the moment, there is the May provision in the Act, which says that the MEC may provide funding, and it's not an obligation. And we are looking at that obligatory process to make ECD a public good, in that we would then be, if the Act is then amended to improve that and to ensure that it becomes a public good through the policy, and that is going to take some time. What would happen is that all children, it won't be a discretionary power by the MEC. It will be an obligatory power response to the provision of funding for ECD centres and other programs. So this is it's a process that has started, the policy development process. But as it stands presently, people are still entitled to go through to the Department of Social Development, to the provincial offices, and make their applications. And there are certain conditions for registration. So this should not be a process that would stop any further access to subsidies. They are entitled to it, they can continue. But all that we are proposing in the next amendment is that it changes from a public, from individual responsibility, parental responsibility, to a public good, to say that we would prefer that all children have access to ECD services.
Thank you very much, Madam, Honourable Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. I'll give over to
I think you asked a question here about what have you found as opposed to deemed, whether or not what it means, whether it makes any difference. So I just need to maybe make this distinction, maybe explain it this way. In law, when you say there must be findings, it means once a person has been convicted,
you must make a specific pronouncement to say, I now found you to be unsuitable for the position, which is what kind of thing, how you said here. However, if you now say, once a person has been convicted of a sexual offense, that person is deemed unsuitable to work with children, it means by operation of law, or automatically, once you are convicted, you are then unsuitable to work with children. There's no need for another process to be followed to come to the conclusion that you are unsuitable to work with children. The Honorable Magabula asked a question which I think he commented around public participation. It is true that the process will still have to unfold. I think just that at this stage you are bringing the committee. But once cabinet is approved, it's a part of what you'll be asking from cabinet to publish the public comment. And that process will still unfold. And I think even this committee itself will also follow the same group of public comment. I think there was a question also, yeah, there was a question relating to the people between the age 18 and 21. Whether there's any specific provision made for such people. I just need to mention that you will see that we refer to these people as persons and not children. It is because they are now at the age of 18 and no longer children. What happens is that part of what is called alternative care includes foster care, grant and foster care placement, or placing children in people, children in children's home. What then happens is that while they're still at school, they go over the age of 18. But they still want to continue their education. So the person to whom this child was assigned still needs to, still agrees to looking after this child. The Act does provide for an instance where if a child is still at school and they want to further education, but they are over the age of 18, then there's a process of applying to the provision and social development for that person to still to be placed, to continue staying at an alternative care center for a specific period of time, but that would be between, it will not go up beyond the age of 18. The age of 21, the aim is purely to ensure that children these people do not get, they're no longer getting the necessary support purely because they're over the age of 18. And this is how some of them can never fall out of school, because part of what they also need to get would be a foster care grant, even if they're over the age of 21. This provision also made that they can get a foster care grant up until the age of 21. I think I'm confusing myself in terms of the age. There's another question around the whether or not you will ensure alignment of the Act with the comments from Justice. So I just need to indicate that the part of legislative development requires that we send the legislation to the Office of the Chief State Officer, which is the Department of Justice, for them to look at the legislation and make the different comments relating to what the Act provides. And we have also made that, but also we take into account also what Justice says in relation to this piece of legislation and see whether we cooperate or not. Because in some instances, we may not even agree on what's said in some instances. That's why ultimately, the Office of the Chief Legal Officer is going to further this issue on certain provisions.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, the question with regard to page E, paragraph E45, the request was that we should indicate which offences were included in the 1937 Sexual Offences Act. Those were primarily the old statutory rape and statutory indecent assault offences, which were appealed from the 37th Act and then reenacted in the 2007 Act. There were also offences dealing with the prostitution of children. That portion of the offences were also taken out and reenacted in the Sexual Offences Act. And then there were also very limited provisions which just touched upon the grooming of children. That provision was also repealed and replaced with an extensive grooming provision in the 2007 Act. Those were the primary offences that were that were taken out of the 57 Act. I might just mention by the one that was that the South African Law Reform Commission is actually still busy with the last part of their original investigation into the Section 36 Act, because this Act is still in force, but it relates to certain offences, statutory offences committed by adult persons, and that is being investigated by the Law Reform Commission. The question Karen said with regard to the insertion of the provisions of being found, the colleague from Social Development, I cannot disagree with him. I agree fully with the answer that was given. I think the bottom line is that as soon as you insert those provisions, those wording, then the issue becomes an automatic one and not a separate order that has been made by the court. And then there are two remaining questions which I can assist the committee with. The one question is whether the departmental officials extending court orders, but we of the Department of Justice is, I think during the presentation, the Department of Social Development did indicate that this is still a matter being discussed with the state law advisors. Strictly speaking, at this stage, when the bill has progressed to such stage where the state law advisors start considering our draft legislation, then it is a matter that will be determined between the two departments. The other question that we might be able to assist with, Larouche, is what the department will be doing with the backlogs at the board. I'm going to ask Ms. Tima Kossan of the department to assist us with that one, with your permission, Larouche.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to my colleague. The backlog in regard to foster care is a matter that the Department of Justice and the Department of Social Development have been interacting on ever since 2010. Initially, it was understood that the rather protracted processes of having the assessment reports done in terms of every single foster care order that needs to be granted was very time consuming, and the department approached the court in order to have an administrative process where the social workers would be allowed to or permitted to extend foster care orders so that it does not come back to court for the extension of those. And I'm understanding that that might be the backlog that is being referred to here. So the court granted an appeal, and I'm sad to correction, but my colleagues from DSD would be able to assert, is that the period under which the social workers are able to extend those orders administratively, I think, runs out at the end of 2014. And by then, Madam Chair, I'm suggesting that the amendments in regard to the foster care backlog will be dealt with more effectively. What we have also done in regard to addressing the needs of the judiciary in this regard is that we have interacted with them together with the Department of Social Development in producing the kind of report that is required so that it's not going to take them a very long time. So those interactions have also taken place already. At the moment, as I said, administrative process, which was initially reflected in the Child Care Act, is being utilized again in the Children's Act. Once 2014 comes, I suggest that the proposed amendment as the Department of Social Development is working on will be in place, and I suggest that the backlog will have been dealt with in that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We seem to have missed out on the thinking as it becomes the question that was asked.
Could I just say, would you like to comment on what Mr. Osmond said?
Yes, certainly. And then you can put it in Spanish.
The backlog at the court, this definitely hangs through at a very difficult time when with the amendment of the Act, and there have to be a whole lot of changes in terms of processes, for instance, to go back to court. Please understand that it's not amendments for all the extensions. Aspects like a child that needs to go deep into the system is still within the judicial system. We have to go back to court to amend if you want to move a child from foster care and place him in a children's home, into a child and youth care center, you still have to go to court. These are specific amendments for the extension of foster care orders. Having said that, the High Court judgment gave us two options, one to change the Act or to come back to court for a new order for an extension. So we will take it up, having heard what the state law advisors have stated on the amendment of court orders that is made by the judiciary, basically. So the process of backlog at courts, it's going to mean, again, that the magistrates will have to be prepared to handle substantial numbers of extension orders coming through. We've also ensuring that we use Section 187 in the Children's Act, which allows for, if the case is stable and it's within, and we can prove to the court that it's stable, we can then get an order that extends it to 18 years old. That means you don't have to go back to court continuously. And we're really pushing and promoting this particular aspect of the 187, of Section 187. We understand that all of this is added processes. We've been, as department, one of the high priorities of the minister and the DG has been to work through the backlog. We've managed to work through the initial backlog of cases that require extension orders, and we've continued with it. But the crux of state of the protection of the High Court judgment is looming. So that is one of the reasons why we thought we'd bring it in as early as possible. The issue around corporal punishment in the home. I think very clearly this is part and parcel of the next lot of amendments, because we believe it's such a sensitive matter. The position, we actually had a whole workshop on this matter about 2 months back, on which position should we be taking. And from that particular workshop, what is very obvious is that you've got very strong lobby groups against it and strong lobby groups for it. However, if you look at it from a child rights perspective, the position that the department has taken is that we have to look at the possibility of not having spanking in home. So it's still under debate. We've got our position papers, and it will be then taken further for discussion. At this point, still very sensitive, and we're very much aware of it. And we find, we'll take it forward. Thank you. Through you, Chair? Yes, we do. And unfortunately, again, it's very similar. It's very balanced in terms of position papers for the against lobby and for the for lobby. Those papers were delivered at that workshop, the research that was conducted. But I think that there was a recommendation after the last report, the South African country report, to the CRC, to Convention of the Rights of Child, that South Africa needs to look at that aspect of the work. And we need to come back on the next reporting cycle with a definite position on it.
When is that reporting started?
When is that reporting started?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We missed the second reporting cycle, as you are aware, Honourable Waters, and the Department of Women, Children, and Persons with Disability had hearings in front of their portfolio committee. I think we came here about April with the final process for the report, the next report. So we did miss out on one reporting cycle. So what we're doing is just catching up. I think it's because it's supposed to be 5 years, initially 2 years, and thereafter five and five. So it was the 2007 that we missed out on. I'm talking under correction. But the next, we are required to report. And I think they have completed the report, and it was taken in front of the portfolio committee. And I know that I went personally to present the Department of Social Development position and input on the report, the country report. But I think that at this point, I just can't tell you exactly when the date was.
Before I give over to you, there's more survival. Let me just give over to your legal customer. Just introduce yourself to the committee.
Well, thank you, Chair. I'm Siyabonga Mashonzi, Legal Services, President of the Department. I think there's a question that has not been responded to, which was to the effect that whether the fact that the Children's Act precedes the Sexual Offence Act, whether such a situation will impact on the validity of the amendment that we are working on. I think our view is that such a situation is unlikely to ensue because the amendments are not in conflict with the Sexual Offences Act. If anything, they are aimed at strengthening the alignments of the two pieces of legislation, therefore enhances the protection to children. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can I give over to Honourable?
Thank you, Chairperson. I forgot this, Chair. Does the Department of Justice and Department of Social Development work together to make sure that the life of our children outside, they are protected? I'm saying this because the private social workers, they are not doing well in our community, Chair. There is an extended office in the Ivory Park, so-called social community goes there at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock. Social worker, she or he will come at 10 o'clock and close 12 o'clock and cut the long line of the people. And when I follow up this thing, I found that this social worker is an NGO and is a private social worker, which means these people, that they are not allowed to work with our poor people. They're just making these NGOs to make money. They're doing business to make money for the life of our suffering people, our poor people. I want to understand that they do monitoring and evaluating of these people, these two departments. Also there, I was having a case in the Randburg court. That case, it was a woman who was launching a complaint of the husband. He don't want to support his children. From 2010, from 2002 until 2010, I got that case. The man was arrested in 2010 when I was intervening, and because I included the fourth law. When I was intervening, the man put on arrested.
Can I just cut you there? Okay. And really, you have the benefit as a member of parliament to have the DG of Social Development here, and you also have the two senior officials from the Department of Justice. So you can take up a maintenance matter with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and then the issue of the Ikageng Center and its operations and the conduct of the social worker for the DG. We also have a DG scheduled for the state. So, and then you look at investigating, you can look at investigating these matters and come back to you. So, because we're dealing with matters of legislation and policy of state. Okay? So after the meeting, we have a meeting. DG?
Thank you very much. Mine is very small. It's just to inquire from the Department of Justice and Social Development whether their systems do talk to each other in terms of the maintenance. You know, I've discovered that every child in South Africa doesn't have a father. But sometimes the fathers maintain in the Department of Justice and Social Development in South Africa don't know that. So if the departments that do talk to each other, it will mean that they will pick up that this child is being maintained by the father. You know, it's quite surprising to check to know that in my evidence, you see, 600 children are born every month. No, not even calculating those who are born at home, but they don't have fathers. Why? So I just want to know that if their systems do not talk to each other, how can they make it point that each one reports to the other so that we should just lock the tap? I don't know. Thank you.
Maybe that's one thing we can look at as a committee. We don't have a lot of time, but the issue of maintenance and social assistance, and maybe at FASA and Justice. But maybe, I don't know whether if the Department of Constitutional Development can also be put on that. And then I think, DG, I haven't forgotten about you. You can just conclude us. Can I give over to Mr. Dupir on his article? I don't know whether you can respond.
I'm sure with your permission, I'm inclined towards the administration. If I may, I will ask you to ask you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I please suggest, Madam Chair, that the query that the Honourable Member has in regard to the maintenance and social workers, especially in regard to the maintenance, be sent to us. We have what we call a special email address, which is on our website called children@justice.gov.za. Sorry? Okay, it's children@justice.gov.za. Since the Children's Act came fully into effect in 2010, we've had this email address available to everyone in the country who has access to a computer. In order to let us have their queries. And what we do is where the queries deal with the work of the Department of Social Development, we will refer to them and we are very able to assist with them. And those issues around which we work with and we assist as well. So that's one method of actually dealing with those issues. So if I may suggest that might be easy. But of course, people can always send it directly. That goes to the webmaster who then relays it to myself. If not, they can send it to us as well, and I will see to that it gets out to us. I'm not sure whether that seems to be a special reason.
Yeah, but it was also the issue of maintenance
events. Yeah. I stand to correction here, but I suspect that our maintenance database does not speak electronically to the Department of Social Development database on with SASA or any of the other grants. I know that we are working towards with IJS a hub on which all departmental information of departments who are working together in the SASA will be affected, and this came about mostly as a result of the Child Justice Act. However, I'm not sure of whether the feeding points at Department of Social Development are available as yet, and I think my colleagues in the department can answer more fully on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Osman. Over to you, teacher.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I just wanted just a small contribution on the other matter. But what I want to suggest is that we provide the committee with the detailed information on the submission of the report. The Department of International Relations and Cooperation has been presenting to the Glasgow and also the Phosphate Man Committee an update report on all the outstanding obligations. In fact, the intention is to ensure that we catch up on all the reports that are due to all the multilateral structures, including also the AU structures. So this particular one, Chair Marco said, there was the backlog in terms of the 207 report, but there is already a process to prepare the next report. We will definitely give the specific dates on that. Then with regard to the request from the Chair, I think Chair is to thank the committee only that I can do for the induction. We have noted most of the issues and we definitely would give ourselves time to share with the committee also on how we are addressing the issues jointly with the Department of Justice, because I think it's a very important relationship that I seem to hear coming up shortly that we need to strengthen our cooperation, and it's an area that's always a challenge with government, but I think with the Department of Justice I think we have been trying to get our houses together. Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think that's all I wanted to say. I don't think I can add much. Thank you.
Very briefly, just a comment. Chair, just to clarify, the department's undertaken to do two things for us tomorrow. If you get the report and the date of him that anti-corporal punishment in a home is going to be there, right? The date, the deadline. You've got a deadline. You said you missed it. And you can find the next date. And secondly, Chair, the other issue was that the figures in the child protection register, you're going to get this tomorrow. I'll be phoning you, Mr. Davies, to make sure you get it.
I was clarifying, Chair, the number on the register, yes, the honourable member is correct. This one was relating to the cycle, when the next cycle, the other report is prepared by the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. We always give input to it. So we were just saying we were going to confirm the exact date for the next cycle for submission.
Thank you very much, honourable members and members, I mean, in the Department of Social Development, Justice and Constitutional Development. Honourable members, in terms of the process, we will listen to the inputs from the two departments and their interaction. So the staff will prepare the committee report, as I said in the beginning of the meeting. And then next week we will then discuss the committee report. Yeah, obviously we'll look at the other places that
we have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Paul. I don't know.